Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the November 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView. View.
Well, the United States Department of Agriculture will release its November crop production report next week, and we're still dealing with the fallout of MF Global and the Grecian situation. What will it all mean to the price of commodities? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Paul Cooley from ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. We post all of our agricultural programming each and every business day of the year, from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. And Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural markets. Well, Paul Cooley, let's start our discussion today with this question. Why did rebasis remain so hot through the harvest season? And is there a line somewhere across the Corn Belt where that changes?
Well, Todd, that's a wonderful question. And yes, it's still fairly strong from A to Z. I think the smaller crop is a factor. I think the cheap interest rates and farmers and commercials built enormous amounts of storage, and they're in wonderment about what they should do with the grain.
We'll ask you in a bit what they should do. Bill Gentry, why did it remain hot, and is there a line?
There is a line, and it seems to be shifting to the west. We heard earlier this week that ethanol plants bidding out of western New York were 65 over, but as you get to the west, it somewhat deteriorates. We've typically used the Mississippi River as a line, but now we're getting some bids even into Iowa, northern areas in particular, that are getting stronger. And we think that that's probably going to continue as we look for where the inventory was.
And Greg Johnson.
Yeah, you have to remember that the ending stocks from last year's crop were extremely, extremely tight. And maybe there was an extra 200 million bushels out there. The government says there was. But whether there was or there wasn't, it was an extremely tight carryout. And so we're still in the process of replenishing those stocks.
Why, Greg Johnson, it sounds like you don't believe the U.S. government on that one. December corn this week, $6.60 and a quarter, the high, the low at $6.31 and a half, a settlement price, $6.55 and three quarters, up three quarters for the week. December corn of next year at $6.78 and a quarter cents, finished a penny higher. Paul Cooley, now's the time. Tell us what a producer can do.
Well, the producer is basically still in a major state of confusion in the fact that he still thinks that the USDA is going to have a smaller, I think, crop on this next production report. We did see two private estimates this week, Stone and Informa, saying the crop was a little bigger, and I still second that motion. And as we said, I think the cupboard was pretty well empty when we came into this harvest, And my impression, the other impression is that $7 corn is probably a little too high at this time.
Okay, I think everybody agrees that the cupboard was empty when we came in. But do you think that we'll have a bigger or a smaller corn crop when we get to next Wednesday?
We think the crop could be just a little bit smaller, but we're worried more about demand than anything. And the other thing, just revisiting the carryout figures, when you think about the price levels that we are this year versus last year and the basis levels that we're seeing right now, some of these guys are getting 15 to 20 over. The best bids in western or eastern Indiana were typically about 65 over. If you're getting paid that kind of a premium in the cash market, it's probably time to reward it.
I would agree with a lot of that. You know, people forget that we've rallied 5 weeks in a row on the corn charts. You know, people come in all the time and say, what's going on with this corn market, you know, when it's down one day? You know, I said, look at the chart. We've been up 5 weeks in a row. Granted, not much. This week only up a penny. But still, we're up five weeks in a row. We're at 650 plus on corn, not 450, but 650. And the yields aren't near as bad as what we thought they could have been back in June and July. So I think this is a good time to reward the market. Can we go higher if China steps in and buys corn? Sure. But we have to remember that high prices send out a signal to for other countries as well as U.S. to increase production and maybe curtail demand. We're talking about 2 million more acres of CRP coming in. We're talking about Brazil planting beans early and following up with double crop corn. We're talking about Russia planting more wheat, Argentina planting more corn. None of that is very friendly long term, assuming normal weather next year for the price of corn a year from now.
We have one vote for a bigger crop, one vote for a smaller crop for corn when it comes out Wednesday. You want to break the tie?
I think they're within a bushel, one way or the other. I don't think it'll. I think we're fine tuning it now, and I think beans will be a half bushel, one way or the other, maybe higher, and corn maybe a half to one bushel, one way or the other. And I don't, as Bill said, I think the demand comes into play then.
You say reward the marketplace. Tell me about how the Andersons is doing that at this point, because you're probably not storing a great deal in-house, is my guess. Is it still moving quickly by train?
Well, you would believe that farmers are selling corn, but they're not. They sold corn early, and then with the hot weather, they went into a freeze mode, and they still haven't come out of that freeze mode yet. So that's why basis is as tight as it is. Now, as an elevator, we are selling our ownership stocks, but we need to replace those at some point in time, and until the farmer sells, we're going to keep that basis at pluses to Chicago.
So you're selling your ownership stocks. You need to replace. And you're saying, hey, go ahead and give us some of that corn. So producers are going to take that with a grain of salt. Should they sell the Andersons or other elevators?
I better say, better sell to the Archer
Daniel
Company. But the Andersons are good customers as well. But I guess the right answer is carefully, Todd, yes. Is it really worth the risk to hold for $7 if China comes in? I do think we have a whiff of inflation, and I do think the U.S. economy has hit bottom and is starting to inch up maybe a half inch at a time.
Now, you said, I think, we've got a smaller crop, but in the same breath, you're telling them this might be a good place to market too, right?
Right. We want to reward the market to these price levels because when you think about, like, if some of these guys did get better yields than expected, your revenue per acre is just tremendous, and you need to take advantage of that and come back in with some re-ownership.
December wheat in Chicago this week. 6.48 top, a bottom there at $6.12. Remember, we give you the high, the low, the day trade, overnight trade, open outcry and electronic. Settlement price at 6.36 3/4, down 7 3/4. July of next year at 6.87 1/4, 18 cents lower. Is it important, do you think, to watch the WASDE figures and what happens with the world stocks of wheat and their predictions for what will be happening with that crop in the northern hemisphere?
Yeah, I think what we were trying to table that and pencil in after the last USDA supply demand report was that both the United States carryover for wheat and the global carryover for wheat and production estimates for that matter were probably at the high end and probably had some room to be revised lower over time.
And, you know, it's the fundamentals in wheat seem to be awfully bearish, and my private weather people continue to harp on we got rain coming here, there, and everywhere in the wheat country. And of course, we know that there's a lot of wheat being sold at some pretty cheap prices. I'm amazed that wheat's able to stay as strong as it is.
Yeah, the wheat market has been underperforming corn, and it's probably keeping a lid. You know, corn prices might be $7 if it wasn't for the fact that wheat is keeping a lid on it.
November soybeans this week at 12.23 top, bottom at $11.80 and a half, a settlement price 4.5 cents lower at $12.12 and a half. That's for this year. For next year's crop, the 2012, a $12.30 settlement price down 6.5 cents. In the state of Indiana, they are now at some of the processors playing overs for soybeans. Does that surprise you, Greg?
Well, the futures market certainly isn't encouraging farmers to move beans, so it has to be in the basis. And that's exactly what's happening right now, is the processors are trying to push the basis because the flat price is not attractive to the farmers in their mind.
You know, they started out the season, they were well under, but they've had to really bid up the price. And are the beans not there, or are they, like corn, and I'm not sure about this either, locked up in a bin somewhere?
I would tend to think that they're very, very likely could be locked up in a bin somewhere. I also think that the commercials and the crushers know that this Ocnov-D's time frame is our window of opportunity for exports, and they've got to get it into the position to send it out to the world, and they've got to do it now.
Well, I think the big factor here is that I think a lot of elevators stored soybeans and moved corn out on the railroad tracks to take care of those bases. I think that really it's two things. I'm amazed how many beans are still coming out of South America, and I'm surprised that China hasn't, you know, crush margins exploded and come to the U.S. Some of our cash grain people, our cash sources indicate they do think that our sales will pick up at some point in time. It's a dull market, though.
Well, dull unless you're watching the European debt crisis and finance, right?
Well, we do kind of watch the stock market, and it's as exciting as any commodity market.
You want to talk a bit about Europe and what's been happening with it and how it's been worked into the marketplace at all?
Well, I think the Europeans finally told Greece, if they didn't wake up and smell the roses, that they were going to be kicked out of the European Economic Community. It's amazing that, Greece is still trying to be horribly stubborn and not wake up to what true good business practices are.
Does it trouble you or not that the G20 couldn't find any money or come up with cash to help Europe out?
Well, coming in through the course of the day, they weren't even sure who or what kind of government that Greece was going to have come Monday morning. So deploying capital into a shaky environment like that's got to be almost impossible.
And how does it all shake out into the commodity markets? Because it has had a long-term impact on the markets. And when I say long-term, we've been dealing with it for a couple of months at this point.
Oh, sure. Most days, the farmers don't even call in and ask, you know, what's the weather? What are the yields? They're saying, what's going on over in Europe? I mean, it's just a soap opera. Some of the soap operas have been canceled on TV, but I think they could put a new one on with the European crisis. And it would, people are following that day by day. And we come into the morning and we say, is it a risk-on day or a risk-off day? I mean, we don't talk about weather, we don't talk about yields. We'd say, is it a risk on or a risk off day? And five times out of six, it's that simple. You know, all the commodities are moving in one direction or the other in the same step. So,
yeah.
It seems like this in the short run anyway. Europe has taken over the trading day to day.
You know, on your daily business, and I'll ask each of you this because you've had to deal with this new term, risk on and risk off. What do you do in the morning to figure out whether it's risk on and risk off?
Well, the Asian markets start trading, before midnight. The European market starts trading shortly after that. So we get our clues from that and then see if there's any developments in the United States in the meantime.
I've had this rule for over 30-some years is if it doesn't look right, don't trade. And thank goodness my customers are listening to me, and we're just basically waiting and watching for stability to come in the marketplace.
And instead of picking the price levels or risk on, risk off, what we've been asking our guys to look at is, what's your revenue per acre? What's your margin? Is it good or bad? If it's a good margin, that's why we want to reward sales, because if something goes wrong in Europe or if China has a problem or even the U.S. has additional trouble, we don't know what the downside price is fully defined. So reward the market and then come back in with some known risk strategies.
Lean hogs in Chicago finished the December contract with a high of $88.40, a low at $86. 6. Settlement price there at $86.85, up 17.5 cents. Live cattle, $125.37.5 on the high, the low at $117.95. Settlement price at $124.50. They were up $5.45 on the week. And the feeder cattle, $143.40, were up at $1.47.5 higher. Those cattle prices are indeed high.
Yes, they are. And, in fact, I think yesterday was a new high close for the lead month futures. Noticing that the April contract high is actually another dollar or so higher. What we told people back in April, or when the April cattle were making those old highs, was we're in uncharted water right now. Know what your risk is, strategize, calculate your break-evens, and use strategies that you can maintain without real exceedingly high risk, even though these price levels are high.
I think export demand picked up in the world, and that's the big blessing in its demand.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report. Actually, you're listening to Commodity Week. You can hear the Closing Market Report the same place if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. First one is our daily program, Commodity Week. Of course, our weekly program, our guests in studio today include Paul Cooley, Bill Gentry, and Greg Johnson. When we return, we'll talk with Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Here's the weather forecast for the state of Illinois from November the 5th through the 9th. Saturday skies from Rockford to Marion should be mostly sunny, with highs in the upper 50s to the low 60s. They'll stay mostly clear as we head into Saturday evening, with lows in the mid-40s statewide. Sunday will show a cloudy sky with a 60-degree high in the northern part of the state, with those clouds tapering to clear skies in the south in the early part of the day. A high 66 degrees in the southern third of Illinois. The clear skies then will give way to an overcast evening, but the rain in the south should hold off until Monday. That won't be the case in central Illinois, which has a 40% chance of rain Sunday evening into Monday morning. The central part of the state will have the strongest chance of rain during the day Monday. It's set at 50% with a 61-degree high. Northern Illinois will be a bit cooler with a 56-degree high on Monday and a 20% chance of light rain showers. The same chance goes for southern Illinois with a 66-degree high. The Monday evening lows will range from 44 to 55 from north to south. Tuesday will show partly sunny skies to Springfield and Rockford, but still with a 65 to 75% chance of rainfall. The highs in the low 50s to 60 degrees. It'll be warmer in the south, just shy of 70, but with a 45% chance of thunderstorms. Those warmer temperatures will give way to a 56-degree high Wednesday near St. Louis and just 47 near Chicago. The sky should be sunny, but still a chance of lingering showers on Wednesday. Wednesday night, it will be partly cloudy across the state with a 33-degree low and possible snow showers in the north.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, Farmer View, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the November 4 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You can always find us online at willag.org. In studio today, our panelists include Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group in Chicago, Illinois, now joins us. He's our guest by phone. Roy, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a unique week in Chicago with the demise of MF Global, a very large trading firm. Can you give me your assessment of how that has happened and the impact?
Well, Todd, thanks for having me. I think that this week I've probably been better off to keep my mouth shut and not talk about what happened to man, but just so that everybody knows, the entire clearing industry has had a difficult time for the last 3 years because of lack of interest income. It's no different than if you're retired, not getting any interest income on your retirement funds. The revenues are down, and if you haven't had a chance to replace them, your incomes are down.
Can you explain very quickly how they make money off the interest income?
Well, everybody sends margins in, and the clearing firm can invest those margins overnight in T-bills, and they'll get some income from that. There's some other little things that take place that allows him to multiply the income that he can get. But basically, everything that the customer seg funds is sacrosanct, and they can't be put into risky investments. They have to be put into overnight money that is available the next day. It's extremely liquid and fluid. So, but the point is that man, EDF man, it tells you how long I've been around. They're no longer EDF men, haven't been for 5 years. The Man Financial has been buying clearing firms for 12 years. They have grown to where they were the largest clearing firm in the Chicago area and three times larger than the next clearing firm based on customers' monies and margins. The issue, of course, was that Mann was trying to rebuild its product so that it was trading more like a fund, more like a Goldman Sachs or a Deutsche Bank than a clearing firm. And they got over-leveraged in a period of time when they couldn't get out of ill-defined markets. It started when FINRA downgraded some of their assets early last week, and Mann had to draw on loan guarantees from two banks on Thursday of last week. Mann tried to sell the firm over the weekend, and on Monday morning, the sales had fallen through, had not been able to consummate a sale. So the Merck closed man down on Monday morning, would not let anyone trade, would not let any positions move out, any monies move out. And that was the beginning of this entire week where no one could do anything with positions at man.
Hey, Roy, looking ahead to the USDA report this Wednesday, last month, carryout on beans was a tight $160 million. Exports were $1.375. Now, all of a sudden, exports seem to be 100 million bushels overstated, according to some people. And all of a sudden, we've got too many beans. Is that export number 1.375, or is it closer to 1.275, and are the Chinese ever going to buy U.S. beans again?
Chinese bought beans this week. If you go back to what happened 3 weeks ago, as beans broke $3, the Chinese were very active. They bought 15 cargoes of beans in 1 week. They've bought five or six cargoes of beans this week. If you look at the Chinese crushing margins, they're still red, but they're kind of pink right now. They're not nearly as red as they were at the beginning of the week. Domestic prices of meal and oil in China have firmed while the U.S. bean market stayed relatively stable. I think that the concern for me is that the bean complex is changing its color. DDGs are very expensive. We see people moving away from feeding DDGs and coming back to feeding more meal and more corn. I think the meal demand will be 2 million tons bigger than what the USDA shows it in domestic markets. I think that the oil usage in biodiesel is climbing. I think that the South American exports of biodiesel into Europe have grown 14 or 15%, and the European production of biodiesel is down. So our oil stocks around the world are tightening a little bit. I'm beginning to feel the bean market has a better demand picture going forward, and because of the increase in acres for feed and feed grains and wheat over this next year, I'm worried about us being able to grow enough beans to supply an ever-growing demand in China. So, no, China's not going away. They're going to be a buyer of beans. I think they'll import something around 60 million tons this year, which is up 6 from last year.
On the topic of we've heard a couple comments from the USDA that they're really wrestling with this DDG usage and the corn number. Do you have any clarity or can you have any insight into that?
They're not collecting any data. They're shutting down data collections for census and other departments. They're not going to collect it. We're going to have to live with the industry ideas about what's happening. I think also that this year the corn crop doesn't have as good a starch content, and the yields on the corn this year are not as good as last year. The issue for me is that the USDA is still using 2.75 bushels or gallons of ethanol to a bushel of corn, and I think we're probably getting 2.85, 2.86, 2.87, something in that area. So we're probably using 120 to 150 million less corn to make the ethanol we're making, and that adds to your supply of corn.
Roy, what's your best guess on the corn and soybean production report this coming week?
Beans are an issue. I don't know beans. I think that they'll be smaller than the USDA was last month, and I don't know how much. My belly tells me a bushel. In the corn, last month in October, they had measured 80% of their test plots. The ones that didn't get measured are going to be Ohio and Michigan and the Dakotas and Minnesota. And I think that it's going to be very hard to move the corn yields very much. I think we're plus or minus 50 million bushels of corn from what the government was last month, but beans is a toss-up. I can't tell. My belly says it's smaller.
Roy, Fed Chairman Bernanke said that he's willing to step in with a QE3 if necessary, if this economy is not growing fast enough. On the other hand, we've got all these fears over in Europe and fears with unemployment. Do we have more risk of inflation or deflation, do you think?
You guys are going to laugh at me, but I want to talk about my travels. I used to come to work on the first train out of Barrington, north of Chicago, every morning. And when I parked, there was three or four cars in the parking lot before me. I counted this morning, there were 40 cars there. In the city of Chicago last year, there were 5 construction trains permitted. Talking about building cranes, where they put a crane upside of a building and they build the floors up and a crane goes up as they build it. This year, for 2012, there's already 33 permits. The economy's turned.
I tend to agree with you. Do you think that, if the economy's turned, do you think that the crude prices are going to be able to get above 95 and hold it? And does that mean it will not be as much of a drag on the economy as we might have thought 60 or 90 days ago?
I'm worried about Europe. I think Europe could implode, and I think if Europe does implode, that's your sign for your QE3 to come. I think our employment is picking up. All these cars that are parked there are labor guys that go. They're the only ones that go out of there at 5 o'clock in the morning, like I do. So I think we're stronger, guys. Demand's going to be there.
Roy, thank you so much. Roy Huckabee is with the Lynn Group. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Now, a final word from our panelists in studio, Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Corn has rallied from 575 to almost 675, and I know it's not 775, but now we know what our yields are, so let's lock in some profits and reward the market.
Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities.
I agree with that. The other thing, too, is start thinking about your sales for next year, especially if you've got a lot of your inputs bought, because if you've got your bins full and your inputs bought, you're basically on 2 years' crop.
And Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Service.
The profit margins indicate we're still going to have a big corn crop next year with acreage.
That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Be sure to visit us online if you have the opportunity at willag.org. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a great week.